Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna add you to my roster. In Roto, replacing Gio Soto, Giolito, and Brito, baby, where'd my fab go? Near the Florida Keys, there's a place in Miami, that's where you wanna be to get ahead of your league. If you put Posey at sea, he'll help in points or OBP. Heath will approve, cause he's under 30, cause Heath's an ageist on the podcast. Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara, Herrera, Cabrera. Don't let the bait that scare ya, Machado or Bono or no.
Hey, the band is back together on Thursday, November 3rd. The World Series is over. 8-7. Cubs win in extra innings. Adam Azer with Scott White, Chris Towers, and Heath Cummings.
Spoiler alert, Adam.
What? That you're here or that the Cubs won?
That the Cubs won. Come on. I was going to watch it tonight.
Oh, you DVR'd it, huh?
Yeah.
I hope you extended the end time because it was very long.
I don't believe that for a second. I know my DVR allows you to add a max of 2 hours to any live event, and it cut off earlier than I would have liked. It was during
Did
celebration
you
and stuff.
It?
But yeah.
You didn't watch it live?
I caught up by the time I get off to a late start. I get home and there's family stuff to attend to. So yeah,
I get it. I get it.
Smart.
I play catch up.
I appreciated the rain delay. Because I had to take a shower and get ready for work, and the rain delay gave me an opportunity to do that, and I was able to not miss any of the game. I thought that was great. I think we should do that every game.
a little intermission.
I noticed you had an email of the day today, Adam, but not a tweet of the day, and I had a suggestion since we're talking about the World Series for tweet of the day.
Okay.
But this is encouraging to the Indians. It was from at C-Tower CBS. But really, get rid of Wahoo. Trade Bauer for a center fielder and go win the dang thing next year, Cleveland. Great season.
Yeah.
You should probably get rid of that logo.
Get rid of Trevor Bauer.
I don't know what Bauer did, but yeah, I mean. Well, it was a great game, obviously. It was an amazing game.
Mm-hmm.
If Chris Bryant had messed up that throw while like smiling and laughing, we would have had a new crying Jordan.
Was he smiling and laughing as he fielded it?
He was smiling the entire time. Yeah.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Well, did you see like Rizzo looking at Zobrist after that
with his hands on his head?
As if Zobrist was some sort of Greek god that he had just seen for the first time. Like, I can't believe you just did that.
Anthony Rizzo was a just delight yesterday.
Yeah, he was like flipping out the whole game.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was awesome. Carl Springs represent. Can you think of a better baseball game off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, I've put some thought into that. I wasn't really old enough to remember the specifics of the game, but obviously I remember the basic outcome, the 91 World Series Braves Twins. That's that game 7 is often cited as the best one.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the Rangers Cardinals World Series from a couple years ago was even more thrilling than this one.
Yes, agreed.
But when you're talking, you know, you're talking about pretty much maximum thrills either way, you know.
I think that quite obviously the best game is the 2014 AL wildcard game.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
That was the back and forth extra innings. I think
when
we were
John Lester.
We were doing Daily Fantasy Live during that game, and you kept on trying.
That was the 2015 against Houston. Yes, the wild card game was against the Athletics. Now you pick a Marlins game, and Adam can pick a Yankees game, and we'll all have a game that was better than that one.
Okay,
I don't know if I've seen a better game than that. 03 Game 6 of the NLCS.
Yeah,
it wasn't a well played game, but anytime you have a Mike Mordecai bases clearing double, I mean. Put that in the history books.
That's fresh in my memory.
That's homerism, sure. Okay, so Yankees, two of them come to mind. One is
Homer.
Diamondbacks beating the Yankees.
Yeah.
That's obviously amazing. That was a great game with Mariano Rivera blowing the save and Randy Johnson getting the win, I think. But also the Rajay Davis home run. I don't think I saw anybody else say this, and I was a little surprised. It reminded me of Jim Leyritz back in 1996. Of course, that was game four, I believe.
Alex Gonzalez in the 03 World Series.
Oh, so who cares about that? But that home run, Rajay Davis home run, reminded me of that. That was an amazing game. There were so many. But I think the Cardinals, game six of the Cardinals-Rangers a few years ago, I don't remember all the details all that much. I just remember thinking that was the greatest game, one of the greatest games I've ever seen.
Well, I think wasn't game seven similar? I'm sure Rangers and Cardinals fans are screaming at this point because they're not remembering the details very well.
But. Game six was 11 innings and the final score was 10-9.
That was the one everyone got mad at Joe Buck for, right? Didn't everyone get mad
the
at
the one? Everyone got mad at Joe
Buck
for?
Was the walk-off in game six and everyone got mad at him, right?
If he was announcing the game, I'm sure people got mad at him.
But I like Joe Buck.
I think he's fine.
He's good.
Like
he's very good.
Heath?
What?
You don't like Joe Buck.
I'm not going to say negative things about somebody else in the industry on a podcast.
Can I say something positive? John Smoltz is tremendous. What a broadcaster.
Scott thinks he's overrated.
Can I say something positive?
Yeah, please.
A-Rod, Pete Rose, and Frank Thomas, that combo is fantastic.
Yes. A-Rod's
very
good. I
am all about that. The clip of them of A-Rod razzing Pete Rose the other day was spectacular.
I think we can all agree that the coverage of the World Series this year, pretty much all around, was phenomenal. The only thing I don't like, and this has become a trend in recent years, is immediately after they win and have this huge moment and like totally pumped and really just enjoying it.
There's a Budweiser commercial?
No. The reporters have to grab them and interview them. Right then, at the peak of euphoria. We gotta, all right, stop the celebration. We need to hear your thoughts that are going to be not very well formed and are cliche ridden. It's awful, and I'd much rather just watch the celebration.
I don't know. I really enjoyed Rizzo's interview.
He was good. He was good.
Raw.
He was good. He was
raw.
That's true. That one specific instance. But I'm talking about
Theo
the broader
Epstein,
trend.
Theo Epstein dropped an F-bomb on live TV. That was pretty great.
How did I miss all of this? Where the hell was I?
That was later on. He was talking about like getting text messages from all his friends.
I think that's when my DVR cut out.
Okay, yeah, no, I eventually went to sleep. So now that we've talked about all the positive things, can I just say, Joe Maddon did a terrible job last night. Why did he take Kyle Hendricks out of the game? That was so stupid. And why did he take John Lester out of the game after an infield single? But, I mean, so bad. Everything about those moves was bad. He didn't want to bring Lester in the middle of an inning. I'm sure he didn't want to bring Chapman in the middle of an inning because Chapman struggles with inherited runners. And Chapman obviously was worn down. He almost lost them that game.
I'm with you. He almost overmanaged them into a loss. I felt the same way. I feel like if it was based entirely on manager performance, the Cubs probably deserved to lose. And it was frustrating.
I loved the sacrifice bunt call. I thought that was great.
The bias,
even
one?
Though it didn't work out, the suicide squeeze bunt. I thought that was a super good call.
The safety squeeze bunt.
Yes. Safety squeeze. Yeah. I don't agree. I think that this reaction from you guys about the way things went for Maddon is why more managers don't manage like Joe Maddon. Because
you
do things like that,
it's been
oh yeah, criticized. Not making decisions in baseball as a manager definitely. Doesn't make you open to criticism.
It had been great the way especially Terry Francona and Dave Roberts managed this playoffs was great, and Joe Maddon had made some good choices too. I'm just saying these specific ones weren't very good. There was no reason to remove Kyle Hendricks.
None.
He was arguably the best pitcher in the entire league this year, and he was doing fine. They had a big lead. There was cushion there. They decided to burn up their options earlier than they needed to. And neither of them was on proper rest, even Lester or Chapman, and it almost cost them the game.
The guys have been excelling on not proper rest all the playoffs.
Yeah, but
the
why take Hendricks out?
Aroldis Chapman had a 1.05 ERA with 0 days rest this year. The criticism of him with Aroldis Chapman.
But he threw so many more pitches.
He threw 20 pitches yesterday.
Two days before that, he got eight outs.
He was obviously gassed. I mean, you saw with your own two eyes, Aroldis Chapman did not have... using Chapman was fine. Taking Kyle Hendricks out that early was not fine. Then you could have extended Lester later into the game. There was no reason to take Kyle Hendricks out of the game.
I think John Smoltz put it best, and this was even before having the benefit of hindsight. He said, don't do something that makes the other team happy. I think that was a great line, and it made perfect sense to me at the time.
Cool.
I have a hard time seeing, like, oh, John Lester's coming in. This is a win for the Indians. Like that doesn't
seem... So you thought he did the right thing?
I think it's fine.
No. Was it the right move, Chris?
I think it's fine.
No. What would you have done?
I think John Lester's better than Kyle Hendricks.
On two days rest in the middle of an inning?
And when you don't know how the rest of the game is going to unfold, you need to keep some bullets in the gun. I would have started John Lester, started David Ross. That way you didn't have to have David Ross batting in big moments, although...
That worked.
Of course.
Yeah.
Stupid me.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have won.
I mean, if it was a one-run leader, even if it was a tie game and you worried about losing the lead and then having that Andrew Miller, the guy who's been crushing it all playoffs, worry about him coming in and just having no chance, then I can understand pulling the trigger at the first glimmer of trouble. But it was still, what, a 3-4 run lead at that point? So, like, the game wasn't getting away.
Why aren't we criticizing Francona for overusing Miller, who had a poor performance in this game?
Mm-hmm. Because, obviously Corey Kluber had to go.
Yeah, right. He was forced to use Kluber. He was forced to use Miller because Kluber was struggling.
I just want to say, don't let the fact that the Indians blew a 3-1 series lead distract you from the fact that the Warriors blew a 3-1 series lead.
I'm still mad about that. The Warriors deserve to go down as the best team in basketball history. I'm still mad. Curry gets injured and they lose.
How do you feel about the Patriots losing to the Giants in 2007?
I'm totally fine with that.
Okay.
Because that was injured. The Warriors would have won if Curry didn't hurt his knee. Chris?
Okay.
Agree or disagree?
Sure.
Would the Patriots have won if...
Injuries happen.
David Tyree.
No, they wouldn't have, but that just had God, on his side. It had nothing to do with injuries.
All right, so, okay.
That was divine intervention.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, said the Giants fan.
Yeah. No, I was fine with that. That was great. Who likes the Patriots? Come on, Scott. What are you going to defend the Patriots here?
I like history. I like rewriting history.
It's basically the same thing as when I was cheering for the Braves to lose 120 games.
Yeah.
They both came up short.
All right. Hey, let's read an email at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And then we did a draft yesterday, a 12-team head-to-head points league draft. Why not? It's only November. And we'll review some of the results and some of the takeaways. First base is terrible. Oh, my God. True or false?
False.
It is if you wait until the 12th round to try to fill it.
It is if you wait until, like, the 6th round to try to fill it.
No. No, there was a first baseman taken, I think, in the 7th or 8th.
It was the 8th round.
Yeah.
And his name was Chris Davis.
Yeah, I thought about pulling the trigger on him. Of course, if Chris Davis does what he did last year, he's probably not worth any draft pick. That's how bad he was.
That's not true at all.
It is true. He was like the 16th best first baseman.
In a head-to-head format, it's probably true.
It is true.
The 16th best first baseman has started as a utility in... head-to-head league.
Yeah, 100%. Especially when you're, 16 includes multi-eligible players.
Okay, I will look up where Chris Davis finished as a hitter, and it will take me a little while. So let me read this email, and you guys can react.
Maybe one of us can just look it up.
No, I'll look it up. You guys react to the email.
Okay.
Email of the day is from Luke. I have an auction question. 5 starting pitchers, 2 relievers. Last year, you guys had 20 to 25 aces ranked and said try to get 2 or 3 of them. With a $260 budget, low-end aces generally go in the 18 to 24 range, and high-end, such as Kershaw, go in the 35 to 50 range. Would you rather have 2 high-end aces like Kershaw and Sale, costing around $70 or $80, or go with 3 or 4 low-end for about the same. So what would your strategy be for starting pitchers in an auction?
I generally don't want to spend more than around $60 to $80 of my $260 on pitching, which makes it really hard to justify spending up for Clayton Kershaw. If you do, I think the reason for that is I think hitting is, first of all, you need more of them, and also hitting just tends to be more predictable, I think, on a year-to-year basis. There's a lot more kind of breakout, out-of-nowhere star pitchers that you can fill in. There's always a Danny Duffy. There's always a James Paxton who makes a big impact on the waiver wire. I think there's less of those at hitter, so I would rather fill out my pitching staff with some of those high upside flyers later on and not spend too much. I think 60 is my preference at pitcher.
I think there were a lot of James Paxton types who emerged on waivers last year that you hoped would be impact pitchers, but then never became that. 2 years ago and every year before that, I probably would have summed it up the same way, but I do think there has been enough of a change in the distribution of talent across all positions, starting pitcher included, that this is a much bigger priority for me. And I think specifically Kershaw, you know, I'm still trying to decide how much I care about the herniated disc that he did come back from. I'm still trying to decide how much that matters. But he is A, so predictable, and B, such an outlier in terms of ERA, WHIP, and maybe not an outlier in strikeouts, but among the very best, that he is worth, you know, the $45+ price tag. In which case, I'd go with the option of drafting two super studs who got basically guys you can really rely on. That's what you want. And I think last year, some of those middle tier guys like Dallas Keuchel and Chris Archer falling off made it even clearer.
Heath?
Yeah, but
I think Chris had a counterpoint. Go ahead.
Well, sorry, yeah, it's just kind of it's tough to say that those elite pitchers are predictable when you had, you know, Matt Harvey had a bad season.
Yeah, but I'm talking about even higher than that. I'm talking about Kershaw, Sale, Scherzer,
Price.
Really, mainly Kershaw. I mean, I would probably go Kershaw and just a super safe like John Lester type.
Okay.
I don't generally draft pitchers in the first round, and so when you transfer that over to auction strategy, I'm not going to end up with Kershaw either. I would rather go with the 3 to 4 low end, because I think you've got a chance that if you take four of those 20 to 30 or 18 to 25 range pitchers, you may end up with a top five guy, especially if you're taking the high upside guys. Yeah. Now, you may end up with a complete bust too, but I'd like to take my chances with that and spend more money on hitting.
Give me a rotation of, you know, Carlos Carrasco, Noah Syndergaard before last season type of pitchers, you know, where I can get a bunch of them and have more chances to hit than have to rely on one pitcher. Because if I'm getting a Kershaw and a Lester type, what are you spending $70 on your pitchers, right? Just those two pitchers, right?
And yeah. then obviously you go bargain basement, rest of your pitching staff.
But can you do that anymore? Because to your point, Scott, it's not as easy to do that as it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're drafting the super safe high-end guys, you can. That's actually exactly what I did. And the more that's kind of why I had that Lester example ready to go. Kershaw and Lester and then a bunch of scrubs. And
you did that when?
In the Memorial Magazine League last year, the one I won. So, and I think my third best pitcher was somebody like John Lackey, somebody I spent $3 on. So, you know, I get what you're saying. I just don't think, and I used to approach pitching that way, and it worked out well. I just don't think there's going to be enough pitchers who really perform like high-end pitchers. There may be like 15, and not all of them are going to be predictable at the start of the year, just because pitching right now is pretty thin.
I also do just have to wonder how much of the power surge and offensive increase last season was just a one-year thing versus the start of a new trend. It's always hard when you have one data point that is such an outlier, and it's hard to say where it's going from.
Oh, I think we're going to debate that numerous times throughout the preseason, and it's going to mold people's draft strategies how much they think that regresses or how much they think it continues going into next year.
It's just really hard because It's not like it was evenly distributed throughout the league either. It was like middle infielders only started hitting for more power and nobody else. It didn't really make all that much sense.
But wasn't there a rise in home runs in 2015 as well?
I think there was a small one. Chris is going to look that up. I think there was a small one. Did you ever figure out where Chris Davis ranked?
Yes. Chris okay. Davis was, in head-to-head points leagues, the number 70 overall hitter. He was in a group with Carlos Beltran, Jay Bruce, Adam Duvall, Gregory Polanco, Adam Jones, Odubel Herrera, Andrew McCutchen, Curtis Granderson, Victor Martinez, guys like that.
I would say in the eighth round, we've taken more than...
Most of those players went well after the eighth round.
Well, I'm saying it's 60 hitters through seven rounds. 55.
I don't know. It would just be a rough estimate. But obviously, the point is that's Chris Davis. That's the downside of Chris Davis.
Yeah,
that's how he performs.
There was a rise in home runs from 2014 to 2015. However, that was more the result of home runs being way down in 2014. There were only 4,186 hit. In 2014, that's by far the lowest of the last 10 seasons. The 5,610 that were hit in 2015 or 16 represent by far the highest total. It's the only season above 5,000 in the last 10, represents a 701 home run increase league wide from 2015 to 2016. 2015 was a very normal year for power across the league.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know what the answer is.
None of us do, but we'll try to figure it out before we start drafting. All right, your news and notes. Yoenis Cespedes is going to opt out of his contract and become a free agent. He went with the first pick of round 5 in the draft that we did yesterday. This 3 outfielder league, 12-team head-to-head points. Any thoughts on Cespedes? The angle I wanted to play here was, he signed the contract with the Mets, but it had an opt-out. If he had a good season, it was going to pay off. This is one of the last guys in the world that I want to sign to a mega long, mega big contract. He would scare me if he got a huge payday across like 6 seasons. I want to know if you guys feel the same way.
I think he needs to go to the American League, probably.
Well,
and I would feel a lot better about him.
Couldn't he play left field, Cespedes? Just can't play center.
If he could play DH, that'd be great.
Are you talking about from a fantasy perspective or like armchair cheating?
Yeah, no, you know? Both. This is not the kind of guy.
He did have the injuries last year.
No, I think Adam's saying he's going to try less if he gets a lot of
money. Yeah, that honestly is, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying that would be my fear as
that's
a
not a judgment
owner.
That I am comfortable making.
Yeah, I don't know any of these players well enough to even think I could begin.
But
to
you
predict.
Do know that nobody has committed long term to Yoenis Cespedes, and you do know that he got traded as a very good player twice.
Well,
he wasn't that good.
He was pretty. He was bad on base guy, but
he was okay. He
valuable
was a pretty
player,
good player, but like he's been way better over the last 2 seasons. He dramatically improved basically since he got to New York.
He might be a nice replacement for Bautista and or Encarnacion in Toronto.
Or Ortiz in Boston.
Yeah, I think they're going to use Encarnacion to replace Ortiz.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm still, he's like, we're a season and a half basically into Yoenis Cespedes' world-destroying baseball monster. And I'm not 100% sure I buy it yet.
I think the change actually started in Detroit. His fly ball percentage, the couple years before going to Detroit was way high. After looking pretty good his rookie year in Oakland, where he was also considered a stud, his fly ball percentage suddenly spiked. It had the appearance to me of a player who decided he was great and wanted to hit more home runs, and then figured out that wasn't the best way to go, changed his approach, and that's really when he took off. And it began in Detroit, where obviously he had the big home run binge after getting traded to the Mets, but the batting average, the change started to reflect there even before the trade.
Yeah.
Okay.
He walked a lot a lot more last year with the Mets. That was an encouraging sign for Cespedes. He had over 50 walks. He had been in the low 30s. The previous 2 years, and he missed some time too. He played like 130 something games. St. Louis signed Mike Matheny to a 3-year contract, and the Red Sox are picking up Clay Buchholz's $13.5 million option, and Clay Buchholz is a SPARP, right? Starting pitcher is eligible as a reliever?
He is indeed.
Did he get drafted in our points league?
No, he did not.
Should he have?
No, I don't think so. Based on how far I've ranked at this point, he wasn't even particularly close to being in mixed league territory. The SPARP who I thought probably should have gotten drafted and wasn't is a name not many people are familiar with, Andrew Triggs.
He didn't get drafted?
He did not. I'm pretty sure he did not.
He was in my queue.
Yeah. Clayton Richard, I believe, did get drafted as a SPARP. That surprises me because I have no idea what kind of job he'll have next year or for whom, and I'm not that good of a pitcher to begin with. But Andrew Triggs wasn't. Clay Buchholz wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Al Melchior, whoever that is, picked Clayton Richard at the end of round 15. Well, you know Al loves them ground ball pitchers.
You know, any time, and this goes for when I worked with them too. Anytime Al likes a player who I see absolutely no value in, I wonder what I'm missing. Like, there's got to be something he's seen that I don't know about.
Well, we can text him. All right, guys, let's talk about the draft here. It was very interesting the way it started. I was expecting Trout, Betts to go 1-2 in some order. Altuve probably 3, something like that, and then Kershaw maybe. Kershaw 1, Trout 2, Scherzer 3. Now, I'll give some points stats here, trying to get people fired up here. Clayton Scherzer, Kershaw, Scherzer, Max Scherzer, starting pitchers, without getting too nerdy, without getting too into the numbers, they do outscore the best hitters in this format by a pretty big margin. In fact, in 2015, Bryce Harper led all hitters, six starting pitchers outscored him. Last year, Max Scherzer had 708 fantasy points. Mookie Betts led all hitters with 653. So, the starting pitchers go two of the first three picks. Kershaw, Trout, Scherzer, Betts to Scott. Arenado, Heath takes Altuve. Chris had the seventh pick. He took Chris Bryant. Then it was Donaldson, Machado, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, and Bryce Harper to me, 12th overall, which made me shake my fist a little bit. I didn't like it. I feel like the 12 names are not surprising. The order, though, is. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and particularly the pitchers. I have a few theories for why Kershaw went first. The chief of them is that we had a few non-CBS people participate in this draft. And while within these four walls, we kind of have this understanding that even though starting pitchers are the highest scorers, it's kind of like quarterbacks in fantasy football. You know, the distribution of talent at the positions is such that you shouldn't really value them to that level. But you see head-to-head points drafts on other sites, and there are a lot more pitchers in the early rounds. So I can understand why it happened. I think it kind of prompted the Scherzer third overall pick. And like you said, I'm fine with both of those guys going in the first round. After that, I feel like starting pitcher was drafted basically as we're used to it seeing. It drafted with most of the aces going in rounds 3 and 4, and pretty typical after that. So I don't know. It's not crazy to draft Kershaw first overall. I actually liked it before. I liked the idea before the next stuff happened, but it, you know, Trout is just so safe by comparison. I don't see how I could pass him up.
So I'll, you know what, we're not going to go round by round or else we'll never get through it. Why don't we talk generally here what your takeaways were? I didn't like first base. I think I was the last one to take a first baseman. And first base is weird. It's almost like how I used to treat catcher or second base, where, well, if you don't get the one you like, you might as well just wait till the very end. And I took Adrian Gonzalez in the 15th round. So, and this is a 21-round draft, by the way, with 3 outfielders, 1 utility, 5 starting pitchers, 2 relief pitchers, no, 1 catcher, first base, second base, third base, shortstop. Heath, Chris, what did you notice when you were drafting?
Well, in the first round specifically, I was kind of surprised that Donaldson was the third baseman to go off the board. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought he might still be the first third baseman to go off the board. So that'll be interesting to watch if those three guys just kind of are a little bit random in terms of where they do. And then I think maybe the most interesting thing, and it will be, especially once we get into like actual spring and other people are drafting and we have ADP, is some of these guys where we have a certain perception of them, and everybody else feels differently. Like, I was surprised Jake Arrieta went at the end of the second round. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think he should go until the third, and I thought I was the high guy on Arrieta.
Yeah, he was the fourth overall pitcher taken. I think you have him fifth, and right. I have him like eighth, maybe. So that was surprising too. And the thing you have to remember is, like, I'm kind of a crazy person having nearly complete rankings at this point. I would imagine in early November, most people are kind of winging it.
You have more free time.
That's true. I'm not covering football, and a lot of people are, including these two guys sitting next to me. So, that may factor in too, that just a degree of randomness that will be kind of hammered out over time. On the subject of third baseman, though, I this kind of inspired me to go ahead and move Arenado ahead of Donaldson. I think I'm going to make that move because it's so close. But Donaldson obviously had the hip stuff going on at the end of the year and is the oldest of all the first rounders, which creates some risk there that Arenado at 25 obviously doesn't have.
Scott's an ageist. I do like Chris. Chris, any takeaways for you, sir?
I do wonder specifically with Donaldson if we're not outsmarting ourselves there. Like, Chris Bryant still has that potential, and we're able to talk ourselves into, well, Chris Bryant's only 23.
Which is who you took, right?
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking at, the draft results, and I'm like I keep thinking to myself, and I've said it before, but it's like Chris Bryant could be so good. He could be as good as Josh Donaldson one day. Well, just draft Josh Donaldson then.
Yeah. I wouldn't go Bryant over Donaldson, but Arenado, I mean, it was so close between the two of them. Bryant, you know, a half step behind, but considering he's going to be the NL MVP this year, I think we're all assuming.
Yes.
I'm not counting on Bryant getting much better anymore.
Yeah, I think.
I don't know.
How many homers did he hit?
He hit 39.
I still think there's room to grow for him as a power hitter.
I mean, pretty much by the time you're Chris Bryant's age, you are what you are, right?
He said with a smirk on his face because he doesn't actually believe it.
Because there was one Fangraphs.
He's trolling Chris.
I missed
now.
This. Yeah, no, I mean, you look at Chris Bryant had a solid home run to fly ball ratio of 48.8 or 18.8%. That's pretty good. But it's not elite. It's not one of the best in baseball. It's not Giancarlo Stanton. I still think he can be a Giancarlo Stanton type power hitter.
Well, he's already hit more home runs in a season than Giancarlo Stanton ever has.
Sure, but the homer pace is not quite the same. 39 homers in 155 games. I think we can all agree Stanton would hit a few more than 39 if he ever.
Yeah, I mean,
to
it
accidentally play
that particular argument is lost on me because I feel like between the two of them, Bryant has just turned in the best year.
No. I'm not. But what I'm saying is that.
But it's because he played a full season.
That's part of it, sure.
But what I'm saying is that he still has room to grow into that kind of power. Where you look at, you know, he was 30th in home run to fly ball ratio this season. I don't think anybody thinks Chris Bryant has the 30th best raw power in baseball. He could have one of those Mark Trumbo seasons where the home run to fly ball ratio just leaps up to 25%, and then all of a sudden you're probably looking at, you know, a 50 homer ceiling,
right,
for Chris Bryant.
Okay,
and
I mean, we're
lowered the strikeout. We're getting into specific numbers at
this point. When I was more really arguing stature. I think he's always going to be one of the best power hitters who strikes out one of the most often, and that's always going to make him a first rounder. That's
21% strikeout rate was
that's not that
really
far from average.
Okay. I mean, I feel like you're nitpicking my argument here.
He's talking
about
like 150
times.
Yeah, right?
I get it, but what I'm saying...
That's minus 75 points.
Hey. It doesn't matter. I want to move on. We've got plenty of time to debate third baseman. We got to talk about overall things that can help fantasy owners right now. If they were just having fun doing a mock draft, what should they take away? What positions did you find to be deep? Which ones did you find to be shallow? What did you notice when you were drafting? Things that you might do differently, things that you might do the same?
One thing that stuck out to me, and Buster Posey was a second round pick last year. He went I took him in the middle of the fourth, and then I thought maybe that was because everybody just thought, well, Jonathan LaCroix is basically as good as Buster Posey now. But then Posey didn't go until the sixth.
LaCroix?
Yes. Yeah, or LaCroix didn't go until the sixth. So if that's going to be normal, I'm going to have a lot of Buster Posey and LaCroix on my team.
There are four catchers that I like. How about you guys?
I agree.
And Schwarber, by the way, Schwarber went really early, Scott.
Well, wait a second. Are you calling Schwarber
a
catcher?
No, but he went in the middle of round five. Do you think that's somebody expecting him to become catcher eligible?
Yeah, he said as a catcher.
But then when I told him he's not going to be catcher eligible, he said, okay, that's fine. And, you know, that's probably when I get to, not everybody has full rankings yet. Schwarber's very top of mind right now. I think he'll go a little later than that in March. But obviously there's breakout potential there. Okay, so the four catchers you like are Posey, LaCroix, Sanchez, who went, I think, two picks after LaCroix in round six.
Yes.
And Gattis, I assume? Evan Gattis?
Yes.
Okay.
And he went late in round eight. That was a good pick.
Yeah, I don't even know when Perez.
Salvador Perez was drafted ahead of Evan Gattis.
Right.
Yeah, terrible pick.
I think he should be.
You think he should be ahead of Evan Gattis?
Yeah.
Well, if you are willing to trade him just before the All-Star break, then fine. But that is like the most predictable. That is death taxes and a second half slump for Salvador Perez.
Okay. I mean, Gattis will be better on a per game basis, I'm sure. I just don't know if Gattis is going to play 120 games.
Oh, I think playing time is a notch in Gattis's favor. Not necessarily versus Perez specifically, but just for catchers as a whole. I mean, he splits his time in DH. That's built-in advantage.
He's got one season. Well, he had 499 last year, but he's got one season with more than 500 plate appearances.
But didn't he get hurt?
That's...
Well, most catchers don't catch.
Yeah, that's better than most catchers.
Right. Right. Perez is going to, though.
Yeah, but Gattis is better than Perez. I mean, in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, Gattis, I think since he broke into the league, he's had at least four or five home runs more than Perez every year. So... I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's not particularly close for me. I have several catchers in between the two. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So, what was I going to say? Oh, you know what? So let's talk about this pitching, right? How to draft pitching. I had the 12th pick, and part of me was a little concerned that if I didn't take a stud pitcher at 12 or 13 in a 12-team league, I was going to be left with some pitchers I didn't really like in rounds 3 and 4. Now, old me probably would have only taken one pitcher in rounds 3 and 4. I went Harper and Correa with picks 12 and 13. I was very happy with Price and Lester with picks the last pick of round 3 and the first pick of round 4. The shift for me, I think, like I said, I probably would have gone one pitcher there in the past and maybe taken two pitchers in rounds 5 and 6. But... with the landscape changing a little bit, I did go two pitchers there, but I was very happy with the pitchers that were available. And Scott, you talked about it. After those two of the first three picks being Kershaw and Scherzer, it did seem like it was back to normal for us with the starting pitchers.
Yes, I got that feeling. I actually went starting pitcher in rounds 3, 4, and 5. So three of my first five picks, which I had also started to do last year in this format. And I think we're kind of seeing the same thing, but with an extra wrinkle that justifies it. In that, you know, obviously there are stud hitters. There are Nolan Arenado, Mookie Betts, you know, Edwin Encarnacion. Even those guys deserve to go in the first two rounds. But then in that 3 to 5 range, you're basically debating between the Adrian Beltres and Kyle Seegers of the world, when you know Justin Turner is going to be available four rounds later. Like there's so much depth around the infield that unless you're getting a Nolan Arenado type, there's no reason to pay up for one. In which case, I think it makes sense to go ahead and draft the starting pitchers before the trustworthy ones are really depleted, which happens pretty quickly.
See, I went pretty much the opposite. I loaded up on the infield and did end up with elite talent across my infield. And I'm okay with my pitching staff after waiting. I think there's a lot of upside. You know, I ended up with Carrasco as my ace, which isn't super great, but then Greinke as my number two, Marco Estrada, Kevin Gausman, Steven Matz. Jose Barrios, Adam Conley on the bench. I think there's enough upside there.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what your infield is? Because you said it's elite.
Pujols isn't, but Brian Dozier, Chris Bryant, Corey Seager.
Okay, so Pujols, Brian Dozier, Chris Bryant, Corey Seager versus Edwin Encarnacion, Ian Kinsler, Kyle Seager, and Ledmus Diaz. I mean, I would say your infield's better than mine, but
it's considerably better.
It's definitely better. On paper right now, it's definitely better.
And like yours is old. Like there is some crater potential for Ian Kinsler and Edwin Encarnacion.
There's crater potential for Pujols.
Right.
Sure, that's one.
No, I don't. Why do you think it's that big of an advantage? I mean,
well, Seager, you think it's a first round pick?
Yeah, he's got Chris Bryant and Corey Seager. They're both in your top 12. And Dozier.
Okay.
It's a pretty big advantage.
I mean, it's a lot
easier to play matchups with starting pitcher. It's a lot easier, especially in this format, if you have a Spart. To say, okay, Brandon Finnegan's, who's on my bench as well, he's a Sparp.
He's not a Sparp. Okay. Finnegan's SP only next year.
Okay.
But I like Dozier more than Kinsler, but they actually finished pretty close in point production this year. I like Corey Seager more than Ledmus Diaz. Diaz obviously missed time with injury, but on a per game basis, I think he was actually even better than Seager. So, stepping back and just looking at the names. Encarnacion, Kinsler, Kyle Seager, Ledmus Diaz. Are you happy with that as your starting infield or not?
Well,
I am.
I'm happy with it if I went pitcher early.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good infield.
I mean, I basically took the same approach as Chris, except I know, but we were right next to each other in the draft, so it's probably a bad idea to do the same thing. Except I waited forever on third base and took an elite catcher, and I've got Posey, Votto, Altuve, and Lindor on the infield. Well, I'm better than... I would guess if you go catcher, first base, second base, short, I'm better than pretty much everybody at those four positions combined. And then I just kind of waited and took guys that I thought could be aces that apparently nobody else likes as much as I do this year. And I got Salazar, Gerrit Cole, Michael Fulmer, John Gray, and Felix Hernandez as my starting pitchers.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
There's a lot of upside there, too.
There's a lot of upside, like, but there's a lot of downside too. I mean,
I can't see a situation where all five of those guys miss.
Well, let's see.
But you need five pitchers to hit eventually. You need to find five who hit.
Let's see Scott's pitchers. Okay. Because he went earlier. Kluber, right. Darvish, DeGrom, Paxton, Manaea. And on the bench, Garrett Richards, Jeff Samardzija, and Zach Wheeler. What do you guys think?
It's really good.
Yeah, he's definitely got two pitchers that are, I think, two pitchers better than anybody Chris or I have.
But there is some risk there too.
Oh, the bottom two. I mean, he's got three good pitchers and then two question marks.
There is some risk, but I don't like with Felix Hernandez, you're asking him to reverse the age trends. Gerrit Cole, I mean, he's coming off a ruined season. Danny Salazar, you could say the same thing. His season was basically ruined by injury. So, and that's before you even have any safe options. It could work out. I just think it's asking a lot more, than I'm asking from my infield.
Well,
no, your infield is going to be very steady.
But it's kind of like the Joe Panic argument, right? Like Joe Panic was this guy you could fall back on last year and you'd be fine in a head to head points league. But the problem is like he has no upside.
Yeah. But I do think this is different. I mean, Encarnacion, Kinsler, Seager, Diaz, they're all better than Joe Panic.
Yeah, they are. They are. But we're also living in a world where infielders are a lot better than they were last year.
And three of those four guys are, I would say, coming off seasons where they dramatically overperformed expectations. Maybe they didn't dramatically overperform their skill sets. I believe in Seager. I believe in Diaz. I don't know if I believe in Kinsler's late career power surge.
But Diaz was the only one who really outperformed expectations.
Kyle Seager did.
Yes, he did. He got the middle infield home run boost.
I don't know.
Kyle Seager is not a middle infielder.
Don't tell me. You're right. Sorry. Don't tell me he did not outperform his expectations. Nobody would.
I totally get that with Ledmus Diaz, but Kyle Seager just basically continued the career path he was on. He hit four more home runs than the previous season.
But he was not going early enough to justify. He went later than his production.
I took him in round six this year. He was probably like a round eight pick.
He had a career high in every major statistical category.
Right, but it was not. It wasn't like a different stratosphere.
It was just possible.
Expected growth from a 28.
It wasn't expected though, because he had the same year like 3 years in a row.
It's certainly possible. It's real. I really like Kyle Seager's skill set. I really like Aledmys Diaz's skill set. Ian Kinsler, not so much. I don't really know what to make of him. But they are. You did. If they all repeat their 2015 or 16 seasons, it's really good.
Right.
But there is some fallback potential.
Yeah, well, look, it's not like you, when you draft, it's your final roster either. So obviously, the waiver wire will come into play. Now, I also, just like Scott, three of my first five picks were starting pitchers. So my first two were hitters, and then I went, you know, Harper, Correa, and then I went with Price and Lester. Actually, Lester and Price, and then Kyle Hendricks with the 60th overall pick. And then I took Alex Bregman, did some gambling there. I have some high upside. I have some risk-reward picks that I want to go through. But just to finish off starting pitcher guys, I want to know if you felt the same way. I kind of felt like, continuing what I was just saying earlier, I kind of felt like things were more of the same in that when you get to like the 30-ish range in starting pitcher, and you got to take these guys in round 8-ish, 10-ish, something like that, I didn't really like the value that much. But then you get a little bit later because the guy who's 60th in the rankings could be as good as the guy who's 30th in the rankings. That's when I liked the value more. And it felt a lot like last year. Did you feel the same way?
So that's comparing like a Michael Fulmer? Are you even thinking lower for that top 30 range?
So where's Fulmer for you?
That's true. I have rankings here. Michael Fulmer is 32nd.
I think he's 28 for me.
Yeah.
So maybe just
past that.
Michael Fulmer, Stephen Matz, John Lackey, Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill. So maybe you're talking more of the top 40 range, like Pomeranz and
Samardzija. Probably a little later then.
Or James Paxton, who I have as my 40th pitcher.
Right.
Go
ahead.
The 60 range, you get into like the Eduardo Rodriguez, Jason Hamill,
yep.
Colin McHugh types.
Matt Shoemaker, John Gray.
Yep.
It is easier to talk yourself into those guys, though, isn't it?
Well, because they're four rounds later, yeah.
Well, but no, I mean, in relative to the hitters that are being drafted in that same place, and I think this just gets into the natural variance of the pitching, of pitching statistics, is that it's easier for me to say, man, if everything goes right for Matt Shoemaker, he could be, you know, a top 25 pitcher. It's a lot harder for me to do that with a Stephen Vogt type at this point. He was drafted in the same round as Matt Shoemaker.
Well, what about Gomez and
Byron Buxton was drafted around later.
Yasiel Puig.
I think it's, and maybe Shoemaker isn't the best example. Let's look at like John Gray. No, same round. Okay. No, that's probably
like,
that's fair. I'd
Taiwan
say.
Walker round 16, Vince Velasquez round 15. Like, I can find myself Drew Smyly. I can find myself talking myself into if these guys hit, they could be studs. And it's a lot easier to do that later in the draft with pitching, even though it might not be like it might not be something that actually happens more often.
Mm-hmm. Well, though I don't think that's necessarily a bad way to approach it. I mean, I do like taking in this format as many as three pitchers early, but you still have to fill out the rest of your pitching staff. So you are going to need to draft more pitchers at some point. And particularly if you invest in starting pitching early, you're going to need some middle round hitters, and maybe that in more of that Michael Fulmer, James Paxton range. That's where you draft the hitters. You end up with guys like Pujols and Kinsler, probably, but players who really just need to continue what they're already doing to actually kind of be value picks at that point. I think it's much safer than the pitchers available at that point, and later on, the pitchers might be more rewarding than the hitters available at that point.
This is part one. We're going to do part two next week. I don't know who will be on, but I want to spend more time on this draft, and I want to finish with this final thought on this draft. When I was drafting, I did not necessarily feel that hitting was so deep, and it's fine. There's going to be great hitters all throughout the draft. I didn't feel that way. I was kind of expecting, you know, just because last year was so different, so much more offense, so many more home runs, pitching was so unpredictable. It just, for whatever reason, this was my first go around, it was all of our first go arounds with a draft since the end of the season. It didn't feel that much different to me. I didn't really like sit there loving all the hitters that were available in this fairly shallow format at the end.
Well, and I know you ran into a problem at first base. I don't know if that's just going to be a one draft phenomenon for you. I didn't notice that, but I did notice in outfield, which was to be expected. I mean, the depth is spread throughout the infield positions. Outfield is actually fairly shallow. So, while we saw like Dustin Pedroia go in round 14, and it's like, man, why did I fill second base so early if I could have had Pedroia that late? I was reaching for Jose Ramirez to fill an outfield spot, not third base. I think in round 9. So I kind of got, for that position specifically, which is of course three lineup spots outfield, I kind of got the same impression.
Is it maybe that did teams just start playing more good hitters in the middle infield and stop worrying so much about defense?
Maybe that's a result of more shifting. If you're able to manipulate the defense a little more, the natural ability to cover more range.
Because it makes there's no sense at all that middle infielders just started hitting better.
It really is also entirely possible. I mean, there are a few potential answers. One is that a generation of kids growing up watching Alex Rodriguez and Omar Garcia Parra wanted to play middle infield.
Jeter? No Jeter?
No, they didn't. They wanted to be good hitters.
Yeah, we're talking about good defenders.
He's won a few gold gloves.
More than a few. I think the more likely outcome, if we were making a pie chart of likeliest outcomes, pie. I think the most likely is just random. It just stuff happens sometimes.
Mm.
That would be my best guess.
Chris and Heath, I want to know if you felt that. Was hitting deep, was it easier to fill your hitting spots than you anticipated, harder?
It's probably hard for, we're probably the wrong guys. Like, I think this makes perfect sense for you guys to have kind of felt this and Chris and I to have not really noticed it, partially because Chris left the draft before we got to the late rounds.
I left the draft in like the 23rd round.
I took Yasiel Puig for you in the 16th, I think.
I appreciate that.
But partially because we were taking pitchers then.
Yes.
Like when you guys were running out of hitters to pick or trying to fill the outfield positions, we'd kind of filled all the hitter positions and we were trying to find pitchers and pitcher upside. Mm-hmm. So we probably didn't recognize the dearth of good hitters. I'm going through looking at it right now, and I can say that in the teen rounds, the pitchers I'm seeing, I agree completely with what Chris was saying. I can see John Gray in the 15th round having a very good year next year.
Or you could see him having a 450 ERA again.
There's not a lot of hitters going after that point in the draft where I'm like, that could be the guy.
You could see him having a 450 ERA, but like, I think it's the range of possible expectations for hitters tends to be smaller.
Yeah, and I agree with that broad point. I don't feel like anybody, like I haven't looked at all the teams, but like Heath's outfield is Starling Marte, Adam Jones, Adam Eaton. It's not like a loaded outfield.
No, it's just average.
I will say, if we played this league out, there's a much higher likelihood that Heath and I will be dropping our 15th or 16th round picks than you guys will.
Why? Who did we pick?
It's just your picks are going to be safer when you're looking for hitters in that range.
Well, I didn't do what you guys think I did.
I was taking pitchers late, just like you guys. I did take Adrian Gonzalez in the 15th round. It was one of the last hitters I took.
Adam and I drafted some early round pitchers and some late round pitchers, and you guys drafted all middle round pitchers. That's more what it was like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I still took chances on the high upside. Or Jason Hamill is going to be great until at least the All-Star break. So I got him in the 16th round. Like, I'm pumped about that.
I loved your Yasmani Grandal pick in 17.
Did you really?
I think that's exactly the type of like safe pick in the later rounds that you can make a hitter.
I loved your Piscotty pick in the 12th round.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah, I think he should probably go about three rounds
early. Fowler in the 14th. There were some good.
There's plenty of good hitters late.
Solid.
And I got solid
Adam Azer. Solid Adam Azer drafting.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll review our teams. Whoever's on the show next week, I hope all of you. We'll review our teams next week. We're also doing a roto draft next week, so we can talk about that the following week, two podcasts from now. Thanks, guys. This was fun. Always good. Always good when Chris. I love it. Chris says, we're crazy, I'm paraphrasing, for thinking Joe Maddon did a bad job, but then he won't actually give an answer as to what Joe Maddon should have done. It's fine. Weak sauce, Chris. Weak sauce.
You know, I got this comfortable perch up on this rail, and I'm just sitting on it, this fence, looking at both sides and judging.
Very good. It's a
good position to be in.
Yeah,
never be wrong.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Heath?
He doesn't care.
What?
All right. Thanks, Heath.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right, cool. Bye, guys. We'll talk to you next week.